All right, you're on the Arms Room with Glenn.
And John. 2 weeks in a row.
Now when I say it, you look at me.
Now I'm just going to pause and wait for you to see what's happening.
Oh, you're so worried I'm going to steal your thunder. But I won't steal your thunder again, I promise.
All right, fantastic.
So I'm kind of excited about today's show.
I am too.
Yeah, we get to talk to Craig Douglas from ShivWorks. He's going to be calling in here in, I don't know, 10 or 15 minutes. Craig is a phenomenal instructor, and beyond just being a good instructor, he has a great amount of real-world experience to back up everything he teaches and the kind of classes. People told me about his classes before, and I'm like, oh man, that sounds interesting, but I don't know if I really want to do that. And then I went to his class for the first time, and now I'm hooked. Like, I can't stop going to his classes because every time I'm there, I learn real-world practical stuff, you know? So it's a lot of fun. But before we get onto that,
yes,
I want to talk about the craziness that happened late last week and this weekend. Uh-oh. We could almost have a whole show on this.
We probably could.
But we're not going to. And that is what happened over in Nevada at the Bundy Ranch.
Oh, my Lord.
So what I want to talk about is not necessarily our opinions on what happened or could have happened or should have happened or may happen in the future, but I want to talk about – I want people to really pay attention to some of the things that happened. The first thing, and I pulled up a picture of it here online because it's crazy. The BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, put up a fenced area with a sign that says First Amendment Area. I'm not making this up. You can go online and you can see the picture for yourself where they wanted people to stand in a fenced area to protest. So in other words, they restricted the space that they could be in order to exercise constitutional rights.
They weren't really overstepping their boundaries. They just did it in poor taste. Because, I mean, the whole protesting First Amendment thing is
sure.
is always and often restricted to certain areas. And
I'll agree
with
that.
There are certain limitations to
it. I'll agree with that. Okay.
Unfortunately.
Uh-huh.
But they kind of... That was dumb.
And the worst part was they put it in the middle of nowhere, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They put it, like, in the desert, like, yep. totally away from the area on the side of the road somewhere. So, yeah. Just keep your ears
in poor and choice.
Keep your ears and eyes open out there, people. Things like this are interesting. And, yeah. I mean, people were getting tased, dogs set on them, without really a whole lot of active aggression on their own. And it wasn't really until an armed response showed up on the ranch's side of things
mm-hmm.
that suddenly, you know, a lot of the government officials kind of took a step back. Before that, when it was just a big unarmed populace.
We're all mad at you.
Yeah, there wasn't, you know, they didn't really have any power. So yeah. I just want to kind of reiterate that when there was an unarmed populace there... that they had no power to resist.
What are you trying to say?
But that when the armed populace showed up, suddenly there was a threat of violence, and all of a sudden things were able to be resolved peacefully.
Yeah, it's amazing.
You know, armed society, polite society, and all that. You know, when both sides have guns, the talks tend to go a little bit better.
Yes, they
when
do.
When one side have... What did Benjamin Franklin say? I'm about to totally butcher this quote, but...
I have no idea. God made beer because he wanted man to be happy. That's
that is a Ben Franklin quote. Yes, that is. That is. No, he said, what did he say? Something about, I don't remember. But like two wolves having lunch. Oh, crap.
I have no idea.
Damn it.
But to finish the rest of your Heinlein.
Do that, quote, and I'm going to Google this while you look that up.
The armed society is a polite society when yes. one may have to pay for his life, may have to pay for his actions with his life.
That's
the other
right.
half of that people forget. And it really wasn't that long ago in America where literally everybody walked up and down the road with a gun on, especially yeah. out in the West.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing how quickly we short our mind is for history in America as a whole.
All right. So I knew I had the concept right.
Okay. All right.
totally derailed my train.
Let's hear this.
Democracy is two wolves and a lamb voting on what to have for lunch.
Fantastic.
Liberty is a well-armed lamb contesting the vote. That's the idea.
There you go.
There we go.
Yeah, you were on the right track.
Man.
But you were way off.
Oh, that was
off.
Terrible. two wolves are having lunch or something. That's terrible.
There's these two wolves, and they're having lunch. And a lamb walks into the bar.
Yeah, pretty much. I was like, quote, butchering. Why don't you make like a tree and get the hell out of here? That was a terrible.
People who live in glass houses sink ships.
That's right. Bonus points for anyone who can jump on our Facebook page and give us the movie for the...
For our messed up backwards quotes.
For those two quotes. So...
Get free high fives.
You get a free hug from John.
Yeah!
Free hug from John. If you can jump on the Facebook page and tell us where those two quotes came from. So, I had a great weekend.
I had a pretty good weekend. What did I do this weekend? My company, Redwire, we sat down and finally shot our first video for one of our products.
Good.
And I got some other prototyping done on some more products for our good friend over at TCB Holsters.
Good. Good.
That pretty much consisted of my weekend and coloring eggs with my kids and the rest of the kids in my family.
Nice. I did some camping.
Nice.
It was very great. Brought out the old spud cannon.
Oh, yeah.
Launched some potatoes. Had a good time. Good times. Went shooting a lot. Shot a lot more. You know, so the funny thing is people think, oh, man, as firearms instructors, you guys must just be shooting all the time. And, yeah, we do go shooting all the time.
Quite a bit.
But most of the time it's training related.
Yeah.
You know,
not just out plinking and having
fun. Not just out plinking, you know, just having, like, enjoying shooting where you're just like, no one's going to bother me. I'm going to load up this gun and I'm going to shoot at that target over there. No one's watching me. No one's bothering me. I'm not trying to enhance some great skill set here.
It's been so long, man.
I'm just burning some powder, you know. And so I got to do that, and that was a good time as well.
Nice.
Yeah, I also got to pattern my son's oldest, or my oldest son's shotgun for turkey hunt starting this week.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so we got all that squared away. So it was good. I mean, it was a good weekend, just good relaxing, getting the outdoors, enjoying some time with the family and some friends and some guns. Good stuff.
America.
So what we want to talk about today, and before Craig calls in, we'll kind of get this fired up.
Before we go there,
okay,
I am terribly excited because I missed ECQC last year because I was in Lands Beyond.
Mm-hmm.
And by missing that, I obviously wasn't able to go to Amos.
Mm-hmm.
So I am terribly excited and terribly horrified about taking this class.
Stop watching the YouTube videos, John.
Because I know...
It's worse than what you think it's going to be.
I know it is. That's what I'm concerned about. That, and I know half the guys that are probably going to be there.
Yeah.
And there's...
And then, like, getting your ass kicked by your friends. Let me
put it that exactly. Way. Yeah. So I'm absolutely horrified, but I'm totally looking forward to it.
And the idea behind what Craig teaches, and I'm not going to give away too much because I'm going to let him talk about it, but the idea behind what he teaches is very much geared towards real-world practical application. You know, so many people, they buy a gun, they get their CCW permit, they carry their gun around, they go to the range, they shoot some holes in paper at various distances, static, maybe even doing a little bit of movement, or maybe they incorporate some low-light stuff, whatever. But what they never really train for is that target fighting back.
Trying to whoop their ass.
That's what they don't train for, you know?
Right.
And the all the various things that go into what happens when that other person, those other people, are moving, talking to you, wielding or not wielding firearms. How do you handle them verbally? How do you handle them physically? When should the gun come out? So many people are so quick to go to the gun. So I think we've got Craig call in and hopefully, so let's find out. Hey, Craig, you there?
Yep, I am, buddy.
Hey, what's going on, brother? How are you, man?
Good, man. How are you?
Dude, I am doing great. Thanks so much for taking the time to call in today.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
So what we kind of wanted to get from you is we were just talking about kind of the practical real-world application of your classes and how so many people go to a range. They shoot on a square range. They shoot at targets. Maybe they move a little, or maybe they do some low light stuff, or, you know, whatever they do, whatever they think is cool and tactical. But what they're missing out on is that target doing anything back to them. It's not moving. It's not talking. It's not aggressing towards them. It's not interacting with them at all. And that's really what you offer in your training.
It is. And, you know, I think that that interactivity component is vital if we're going to set ourselves up for success. And it doesn't necessarily have to be, entangled or clinch range pistol work like I tend to focus. That's, you know, as you know, that's one of the places I tend to focus. But we've got to have a body, you know, and we have to have an opposing will with some intention, and as importantly, as Cecil Burch, one of my jiu-jitsu coaches, likes to say, freedom of action. They have a plan of their own, and I think when you start training like that, it'll bring some things to the forefront that just you'll never see otherwise. If we constantly have one-dimensional targets, you know, cardboard and paper, and that kind of stuff is necessary, but I think as soon as possible, if we can start training it against, around, with other people, then that's the way to go.
And you offer, I mean, when you're training with your classes, a lot of times people will look at different force-on-force training that's being offered, and they go, oh, this is just, you know, one guy's perspective on things, or this is just how one guy thinks that these kind of situations happen. But, I mean, you travel all over the nation, all over the world, I know, and train everything from military units to law enforcement agencies to regular civilians on these concepts, and people love it. So, I mean, your concepts are not something that you're just kind of pulling out of your ass. I mean, these are based on your real world experiences and your own training and how you've seen people really react in in force on force kind of situations. So, based on that experience, why do you think that opposition and training? I remember you said something to me, I think the very first time I trained with you, where you said opposition and training is vital. And that's almost kind of always stuck in my head. Why do you think that for even the average person, obviously for law enforcement, military, we understand they have a higher likelihood of being involved in a deadly force incident, but why even for the average person is that opposition so incredibly vital?
I think mainly because it's the only way that we can really validate what we're doing is if we have someone to validate it against. You know, in a very simple way of thinking about this, to go to another area, to go to another discipline, it's kind of like having a conversation with yourself. You don't know if you're good at speaking in public. You don't know if you're an effective communicator if you're talking to yourself, you know. But if I engage in some dialogue with another person, I can find out real quick, does this person hear me? Am I an effective communicator? Does what I'm saying even make sense? You know, and I think it's that way with anything. But I think for whatever reason, in defensive firearms training, and you could probably list a number of reasons, but for whatever reason, that element historically, and I think it's better now than it's ever been, trains more available, trains probably, you know, arguably more relevant than it's been in a lot of ways. So you could say that you know, this kind of stuff has been around, but it just hasn't been prolific in defensive firearms training. And why is that? Why if we're training to shoot people, why aren't we figuring out a way to inject people into the training? You know, it's been very, very scarce historically. You know, you can go here and go there, but and the people that are doing the training, do they know how to conduct training? Do they know how to create an effect on a person? One thing I like to do is try and look at what is it that diminishes performance. You know, if we just have two guys who each respectively have an airsoft pistol, and we say, all right, we want you guys to draw on each other, and the first guy that fires or the first guy that hits wins, what are they going to do? You know, are they going to move? Are they going to run? Are they going to shoot? You know, is what's the end state, getting shot or not getting shot or shooting the other guy? And then we say, okay, here's what's going to happen. One person gets to talk, and the other person has to listen to them, all right? And what I've seen is something as simple as that, as injecting that verbal component, does a lot to diminish things like reaction time. It also increases or decreases, dexterity. I see a lot more guys dropping guns, having negligent discharges when they have to come out of some kind of layer of verbal tasking, which, think about it, is probably conducive to counter-ambush training, because it's doubtful that if you're ambushed by a bad guy that you're going to be ready for it. So add adding all those elements, you know, why people diminish, trying to help people either who don't have verbal agility, engage in something like a playlist, a pre-rehearsed, you know, little list of things they would say to accomplish whatever it is they're trying to accomplish, to move somebody away from them, to tell them, announce their intentions, whatever. But the idea of a playlist helps with that. And you only get that kind of stuff. And all those things only become apparent when you add this interactivity component. So why is it important? A lot of times you don't know what you don't know until you start doing it against people. It'll do a lot to change and prioritize your curriculum itself. So I think that when you add this component, besides the fact that you are setting yourself up for success, that it goes a long way towards sometimes I know for me personally that this idea of adding this interactivity component, I certainly didn't have it when I was coming up as a young police officer, consistently enough and done well enough to give me the performance that I really needed when I was working as an undercover officer, you know, and I was put in environments that I'd never been in before, with levels of interactivity that I'd never been engaged in before, having to perform and engage in some kind of combative motor skill, whether that's empty hands, whether that's producing a firearm or whatever else. You know, my range training never had me trying to buy two rocks of crack cocaine from a dope dealer who was a little hinky about whether I was or was not a police officer, and then a baby's mama comes out of nowhere and starts screaming at me to get out of the neighborhood, and then another crackhead comes up in the middle of all that and says, hey, man, I know somebody who can buy from. You know, I never had that level of verbal engagement during a qualification. And you know, consequently, hey, man, my performance sucked. So there you go.
Well, I think that's probably one of the things I like training about you with the most is that, you know, having been through a lot of different training schools, and there's a lot of guys who, you know, they want to tell you about all the high speed, low drag, man killing, Jedi warrior shit that they've done. But you're happy to tell us stories about, you know, the time you got your ass beat, or the time some guy cold clocked you, or whatever, and then take that experience and turn it into this is where I learned this bad habit that kind of set me up for that failure, so to speak. And this is how I changed my training so that didn't happen again. Do you think that people on square ranges who've only ever received square range training are without any kind of opposition, do you think that those people, officers, military folks, armed citizens, do you think they're honestly ready for a force-on-force situation?
When you say force and force, do you mean a real-world event or do you mean a training event?
A real-world event.
Well, you know, so here's the thing. I think as long as the problem is relatively simple, then they do pretty well. You know, it's very difficult to figure out, you know, for a given problem, what are the ideal practices. I'll give you an example. Tom Gibbons, at Rangemaster in Memphis, Tennessee, has a really, really incredible track record of armed citizens, not police officers or military folks, but armed citizens killing bad guys. I think Tom has had 62 students involved in shootings at this point, and 60 of them have won. The two that didn't, I think he likes to refer to them as a forfeit because they weren't carrying their guns when they were killed.
Right.
So, right. You know, Tom's got a great track record. Now, Tom doesn't do any force-on-force, doesn't inject an interactivity component, just does traditional marksmanship and training on flat, one-dimensional targets. So why is Tom's why are Scott so successful? You know, if that's the case that, hey, you have to have this interactivity component, and it's vital, as I believe it is, then why are his guys so successful? From what I've seen, and I've dove into those shootings, dove into those incidents, those were pretty simple incidents. There was a bad guy who was detected at range. His intentions were very clear. there wasn't a lot of verbalization and engagement, and the student was able to get the gun in hand and, you know, put rounds in the guy. So it was a pretty simple kind of thing. Where I think we start seeing diminished results is when there's any level of ambiguity in the scenario. Good example of that would be, and I think this happened in Phoenix, if I'm not mistaken, we had a homeowner shot by police. Not, what was that, 2 years ago?
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, I do know the incident you're talking about.
Yeah, a homeowner shot by police, you know. Arguably, you could say that the police probably didn't have the level of interactivity to be able to discern in a given moment. Now, and that's, again, I'm not being critical of police officers there. But anytime there's any kind of ambiguity, that's when you see a lot of diminished performance. The case that's made national headlines about the old Alzheimer's patient, a 70-something-year-old man with a small rat terrier-type dog banging on a door in the middle of the night. Crazy guy, you know. Boyfriend comes out, engages the guy, sees something in his hand, and pops him. Now, it's probably a legal shoot. It's probably it was a good shoot because it didn't get true bill by grand jury. It got no bill, if I'm not mistaken, in the state of Georgia. But, was that a good decision, you know? Because the legal requirement for killing another human being, to be quite frank, is not that high in most places that I've seen. Do I think we can do better? Do I think we need to make better decisions and hold ourselves to a better standard? Yeah, absolutely, I do. Nobody wants to live with killing some old crazy man, pretty much helpless, you know. Nobody wants to have that on their conscience. Nobody I know that trains in defensive firearms. So I think we need to make better decisions. I really do. So that's what I see. If there's any kind of ambiguity, or, you know, arguably, if you want to talk about the Zimmerman case, did that have to happen? Did that have to go to guns? Was there a decision-making process, a discernment process, a lack of an interactivity component, a lack of a combative component that resulted in, well, you know, okay, you have to good shoot. Guy's not a convicted felon. He's not going to prison. But that guy's life is over. He might as well, you know, surrender his citizenship and go live someplace else, because he's done. He's done in the U.S. That's what you got to live with. So there you go. I think anything beyond a simple, I hate to use that word, a simple shooting, a simple criminal assault, we see some really, really, really poor performance when there's any kind of ambiguity involved.
Well, and I think the when I took your ECQC class last year, your Extreme Close Quarters Concepts course, I think that the biggest thing that I learned from that course was, like, I'm a fine shooter. I can get the job done when the gun comes out. But up to that point, that's what I was kind of unclear on, really, you know? And that whole part of dealing with people that, like you said, are ambiguous. You don't really know what their intentions are. Dealing with multiple people who are engaging you verbally and moving around you, and you're trying to not, you know, get surrounded, and you're still trying to handle them verbally, and you're still trying to watch their hands, and you're trying to watch the situation around you. Like, all of a sudden, the idea of, okay, guy's going to come through my front door, and I'm going to meet him in the hallway, and I'll light him up like a Christmas tree, and boom, that's it. It's easy, you know, easy shooting, so to speak. All of a sudden, when you start adding all the other stuff that can go wrong, you know, it's that guy coming in the front door and another guy coming in the side door, and now there's nothing in their hands, so now you're second guessing yourself, and they're talking to you, and one guy's moving towards you, and the other guy's kind of standing still. And, you know, one thing that happened in the AMIS class, your AMIS class that I took, that I found really interesting was, okay, now that guy's there and your kid's screaming, you know, in the other room. Okay, now what are you going to do with this guy that's standing here in front of you,
right,
you know, unarmed, so to speak? All those kinds of factors are the factors that I think your training really brings to light and helps people work through, simply because without that interactive component in training, when you're just on the square range shooting a target, especially if you're in a training class where someone's telling you when to shoot, you're really missing out on how to read people, how to deal with them verbally, how to not get sidetracked by that verbal engagement to the point where, you know, all of a sudden they're blindsiding you or pulling out a weapon or whatever. And that's actually kind of an interesting component that one of our students had a question on, who was in your ECQC class last time we hosted it. Okay. And that was Jason Sliss. He's the owner of TCB Holsters. Yeah, I'm sure you remember him. And he had a question. I'm going to pull it up here real quick. So he said, how does he word this? How do you suggest tuning aggressiveness? And I had told him about the AMIS class and some of the lessons that I had learned. And one of the biggest lessons that I learned from AMIS was I saw in a group, and AMIS, for those of you listening, is Armed Movement and Structures. It's kind of your second level class, right, Craig?
I know it's a second level class. There's no prerequisite for it. It's just a different focus, just like Extreme Close Quarter Concepts or ECQC, which we referred to that a couple times. Is basically an entangled pistol class or clinch range pistol class, and that's kind of where we focus, getting functional with the gun at 0 to 5 feet. AMIS Armed Movement Structures is another class whose focus is on a contextually underscored strategy template for the average person to manage any kind of solo by themselves structure and movement problem. You have to move through a structure with a gun to either search, to evacuate, to leave. It could be a commercial structure, you know, like a theater or a school. It could be your home, okay? But it's a set of movement principles. And then we add some specific situations. So yeah, absolutely.
So what I saw during that class, and I learned a lot in that class as I learned in ECQC, what I saw, is we had a group of people who none of them were new to the gun, so to speak. I mean, everybody was well trained. We had other instructors, you had law enforcement, military guys. Everyone had a good background, and I saw good training. But in a lot of cases, I saw a lack of aggression when aggression was needed. Right. You know, I would see people shoot an opponent twice and then reassess, you know, pull the gun back to a retention position and then see what happened. And of course, then the opponent just like, well, screw that, and lights them up. And so right. I saw a lot of that. How do you think that, yeah, and that was kind of Jason's question. How do people who are really well trained with a firearm, you know, they've been through a lot of square range classes. Maybe they've even been through some force on force training. How do they tune that aggression so that when the time comes, they're really honestly ready to engage somebody until that person is totally and utterly defeated? How does somebody tune that, so to speak? Because I mean, I think some people are kind of born with it and other people kind of aren't. So if you're not, how does someone tune it?
That's an interesting question. It's a good question. That's a good question. I'm not even sure it's an aggression issue. You know, I'm not even sure if it's a matter of, well, I only want to shoot this guy twice, so I don't want to shoot him too much. You know,
right.
I'm willing to shoot him 5 or 6 times. I think a lot of it goes back to patterning and how we've been trained. You know, I like. More than aggression, I like a person to be in control. Aggression should be appropriate. It can be, you know, focused and laser-like, which is generally what I prefer. You know, you may need a little bit more of it. You may need to harness some more of it to get out of a bad situation. But I really like for people to be in control. If you're in control of your emotional state, then you can be more or less aggressive. You can make better decisions, so on and so forth. So being in control, I think, is probably more important than being aggressive. Now, how do we train ourselves to shoot a guy enough? How do we train ourselves to press a fight or press until somebody stops? I think that is, again, something that you'll learn when you add a body. In other words, when is it enough gunfire and when is it too much gunfire? How do you learn? Well, you know, if we if we think to ourselves, okay, probably most people that stop doing what they have, whatever it is they were doing that rated gun shot, okay, assaulting you, breaking your house, whatever else, whatever it was that rated gunfire, you know, if we're really actively engaged with that person and we are putting rounds on them and we detect some kind of effect, and that effect could be a guy dropping, that could be, hey, I'm tired of getting shot and I just sat down, okay, or I ran off, or I somehow or another diminished. You don't get that kind of feedback from a target. You know, I think we've done things before, like, okay, well, you know, I'll take this cardboard box and I'll put a balloon in it, and when I pop the balloon, you know, the target falls through, you know, it drops to the ground, ergo I have effect, and they have to hit it here to get that kind of effect. Again, there's not enough interactivity. There's not enough reaction. I'm not getting any kind of feedback from the target on what my rounds are doing. You will get that with a body, you know, and then you can do things like script that. Historically, I run student versus student evolutions, and I don't script anything. But, you know, if you're trying to produce a very specific effect, such as fire until it's done, regardless of how many rounds, then you can have dedicated role players. You can take bodies. If you have a training group and say, okay, anything that hits outside of the nipple line, we're gonna allow some diminishment, but the adversary is going to continue to press a fight for it. Versus, okay, I got four rounds high center chest. We're going to say that that's going to make you swing. Adding that kind of stuff in there, and I think you need to do that on a regular routine basis. Like, I don't know, maybe if you can initially, I think a good workup, you know, of a weekend, but if you can follow that up with a few sustainments within 3 or 4 months, I think that goes a long way towards not patterning yourself into, you know, not enough, too many, so on and so forth, and actually assessing the target, assessing the person that you're shooting for some effect. I think that helps out a lot, too. So I wouldn't even say it's an aggression issue, you know, such as maybe we just haven't been patterned or trained correctly, because we don't have targets to give some kind of feedback. We have people. We have people that scream. We have people that run off, you know, so on and so forth. I think that's a big part of it.
Well, I want to kind of interject my experiences that I had in ECQC, but we've got to take a quick break. Okay. It's going to be about 5 minutes, Adam. Yeah, 3 minutes? 3 minutes. So if you can just hang on the phone, Craig, we'll be back in about 3 minutes.
Absolutely, buddy.
All right. Hey, thanks, everybody. You listen to The Arms Room.
Breaker 1-9. How about that bandit? You got some ears on, son.
Have you ever wanted to be a truck driver? If so, pay attention. If not, pay attention anyway. Southwest Truck Driver Training offers everything you need to get started. You can get hired before you begin training. They've got GI Bill approved training facilities, day, night, or weekend programs to fit your busy schedule. If you have any questions, no sweat. They've got veteran supportive campuses with veterans on staff to serve you. And on top of that, they have lifetime job placement assistance. Put the pedal to the metal. Call Southwest Truck Driver Training today.
Everyone's going to need an attorney at some point in their life. I'm no different. Hey, everyone, it's James from Vets On. Whether it was my last will and testament before deployment or my ongoing custody battle for my children during my divorce, I needed help, so I lawyered up. If you need help, I urge you to contact Capstrom Law Firm. Capstrom Law Firm in Springfield, Missouri, services clients throughout the state in criminal law, personal injury, and family law. With over 13 years practicing law, Tom Capstrom understands both law and court procedures and how stressful they can be. Let Tom Capstrom Law Firm and his dedicated staff take the stress and worry out of a difficult situation by calling him today. We feel so strong about the work that Tom and his staff are doing that he'll be a monthly guest on the show. Tom is a veteran and a listener, for God's sake, so you know the guy is solid and will fight for you. Give Tom a call today by calling 417-864-0552 or email Tom at capstromlaw.com. And don't forget to tell him that Vets On sent you.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertising. sick and tired of being sick and tired? Are you or someone you know suffering from eczema, diabetes, or vitamin deficiencies? Then I can share with you something to help remedy that with health and wellness. It can be a business plan too, which is a great opportunity to meet and interact with all types of people who care about changing lives. So when you are ready to make a difference, call Jamie at 602-295-9969. That's 602-295-9969.
Hey everyone, it's Adam from Vets On. Are you or someone you know looking for employment? Then look no further than iVetX. iVetX is placing veterans with the right hiring companies. Join their mission in putting veterans in inspiring careers with insured success. Access their national pipeline of military talent for companies. All veterans are pre-screened for 55 soft skill sets, 800 clarification types, education, experience, salary range, and so much more. iVetX can help you find the perfect job to veteran match. Your skills are based on what's needed for success in that job. If you're a hiring company or a veteran looking for your next career, then get started today and go to www.ivetx.com. iVetX, bridging the employer-veteran gap by putting Americans veterans to work today. You're listening to The Arms Room on the Vets On Media Network.
All right, you're back with The Arms Room, and we have been talking with Craig Douglas of ShivWorks. You still there, Craig?
Yes, sir.
All right. So kind of to touch back on what we were talking about before the break, and that is the, you know, you said it's not really aggression necessarily, but it's control and experience with dealing with targets that are actually going to move and shoot and talk and do all that. One of the things I noticed in ECQC that was kind of at first kind of frustrating to me was we'd get into an evolution. I'd get to the point where I needed to draw the Sims gun. I'd pull out the Sims gun and start getting, you know, these incredibly good shots on target, and you wouldn't call the fight. You know what I mean? I'm like, but I killed him. You know what I mean? I killed the guy. And all of a sudden, something happens with the gun. Run out of ammo, malfunction, whatever. And the guy's on top of me kicking my ass. And I'm like, and I'm still stuck in the loop of like, well, why didn't Craig stop it, you know?
Exactly.
And that was a great learning point for me, because obviously that continued throughout the weekend of the class. It's like people would shoot and get good hits. But just because they got a couple of good hits doesn't mean the fight would stop. But that's how people train on a square range.
It is definitely. And you know, I don't have to train someone how to recognize that they got a good hit. I don't have to train anybody how to do that.
Right.
You know, you'll know when you get a good hit, because
right,
that dude quits doing whatever it is he was doing.
Right.
Like I said, whether he sits down, runs off, or you do get some fantastic Hollywood effect, like geysers of blood, you know, and guys flying off their feet. You know, if the bad guy goes, full bore Tarantino on me,
right,
then I know that works. I'm not teaching people how to deal with that. You know, they can deal with that. They can high five themselves.
Right.
But dealing with, yeah, it didn't work so good, or wow, I thought I did right, and he's still coming. That's a sickening feeling.
Mm-hmm.
That really is. That's a sickening feeling. Man, I center punched this guy. I hit this guy with a payload of buckshot in the chest, and he still is coming. What is up with the zombie? I think that kind of stuff is what you need to deal with in training.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need training to deal with, well, you know, hey, I did a good job. It's not what you need training for. You need training to deal with, well, I just had a belief system shattered. What's next?
Mm-hmm.
Can I cope? You know, a big part, I think, of this training is teaching people that, how to cope. You know, how to cope when a belief system is shattered, when something doesn't work that you know is going to work. How to generate plan B in a moment where plan A has never failed. You know, it's very analogous to, you know what, every time I push the brakes, they work. Every single time. Every single time I push the brakes in my car, they work. What happens that one time? What's that feeling like when you need your brakes and you hit the pedal and it sinks to the floor and the car doesn't slow down?
Right.
That's the moment I think we need to train for. That kind of I'm not sure how to say the word on the air.
Yeah, you're okay.
Oh, shit.
Go for it.
Yeah. Okay, so I can't say it. Yeah. That kind of oh shit moment. That's what I think we need to address and train. I like those cracks and crevices, those deep drop offs in those moments where everything we know works fails. What do you have? That to me is the measure of a tactician. That to me is the measure of someone who is prepared. Because they look at that 2% of the time. That's where I like to explore combative motor skills in relationship to, you know, personnel and environmental concerns, most surely. Lots of learning occurs.
So you teach, as I said before, I've been through a lot of courses, a lot of different training schools. John here has been through
a couple.
John, I don't think you've ever met John.
Hi, John. I'm looking forward to your class coming up soon. And I'm absolutely terrified.
John.
Oh, man, it's never to be terrified of. It's a good time, you know.
The problem is John hangs out with me and Brad, and so
the guys that are going to be there, and there's only one of them that I can beat up.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Brad is going to be that.
Yeah.
And he's even more of an ox than he was before, Craig.
The dude's turning into a ridiculous
He's actually
machine.
Lost a lot of weight and put on more muscle. He's a machine now.
That's pretty gross. That's just damn near unmanageable. It's funny too, man. When you make that remark about, man, I'm a little concerned about this course. What other kind of training invokes that feeling? I love that.
Man. But see, that's the thing. We love that too. and that's
seriously, what kind of training makes you take pause and go, do I really want to do this?
Mm-hmm.
As we talk about in the hot wash of especially ECQC, there are a lot of people that will see videos, student posted video of their evolutions that throw it up on YouTube. Hey, right. Look what I did. And they'll look at that and they'll say, yeah, not me, dude. I'm not even going to try that.
So they call it Fight Club with Guns, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Fight Club with Guns. Absolutely. A lot of people won't even try. They won't even try and step into it. No way. Not doing that. It's too dangerous. Yeah, I'm too old for that. I got a bad back. You know, that's why I carry guns and I have to do all that crazy shit to begin with. You know, you'll hear all kind of excuses and so on and so forth. And hell, I just had another person recently, as in within the past 2 weeks, over 70 years old, doing this coursework. You know, so I think I'm lucky there in that it is a self-selecting group that comes in and does this kind of training. I think I'm kind of, well, there's no doubt, I don't think, I know. I know I'm really spoiled in the type of person that just signs up, that decides, you know what, I'm going to do this. Because very few, I think I've had maybe four or five over the years, very few people don't know what they're getting into when they sign up. Very few. They've all seen the video. They've all been researched. You know, Google's your friend. Everybody gets on Google and says, I want to see what the spell or the course review say or the AAR say. And they'll find some video, you know. So by the time they get in, they know what they want. And they work hard and they learn a lot about themselves. They really, really do. They have a new perspective. One of my good friends likes to say, you know, it's about developing a lens, you know, a new lens that I can view the world with and assess a certain kind of training, close range training, close quarters training.
Well, and I think that's probably one of the big advantages, excuse me, of taking the training as well is – when you're training in these classes, you're training with and against some of the better people out there, people with a better mindset, better skill set, better fighting abilities. I mean, you know, I'm trained up against people who learn to fight in different styles than I learned to fight. So I've got to manage that. You know, I'm training with people who handle their firearms differently than I do. So I have to manage that, you know. And so I'm kind of training against that upper echelon of students. Like you said, you are definitely kind of spoiled, having been to several of your courses and knowing the kind of students we have to deal with and the kind of students you get to deal with. Yeah, you're a little spoiled. But it's a great opportunity to go and train against people that you're not sitting there going, look, this is the end the bullet comes out of. You know, you've got this great level of students so that you go, look, if I can win or at least, you know, somewhat prevail against these types of people, then I'm probably going to be okay on the street.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Firm believer in that. Absolutely. 100% firm believer in that, you know, and, yeah, the caliber of the guys that you're going up against are way, way better probably than anything, and more prepared than anything you're going to meet within a criminal assault. And the feedback that unfortunately I've had, because people have to use some of the content from the coursework, the feedback has been, wow, the training was harder than the fight.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I want to hear. That's what I want to hear. Hey, man, you know, X happened, and, you know, I cut through this guy like shit through a goose, you know. And that's what I'm looking for. There just wasn't much to it. It was kind of, you know, the theme seems to be it was kind of anticlimactic. I knew what to do. There was no adrenal response. It was the very matter of fact. Their recall is a lot better, and a part of this training in general is in the idea of adding the interactivity component. I'm sure we've heard the old adage that, well, experience is the best teacher. Well, the problem with experience when it comes to defensive firearms training is only one experience can cost you your life. So that's a pretty shitty way to learn, by experience. So if we can't learn by experience and we understand that's a poor way to learn, then probably the next best step is to have experiential training to give someone benefit of an experience, simulated, albeit, but the benefit of an experience without the consequence of getting injured, getting killed, shooting and killing another human being, okay, going through the legal process, so on and so forth. And I think, and again, you know, I haven't had 100 people come back and give me feedback on ECQC, okay? But I've had a few. And what I've been told by them bears this out, that, hey, man, that was just kind of easy at the end of the day. It was. Or I knew what to do. I didn't have the feeling of panic. Wow, it was easy because I didn't have a fist helmet on my head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everything's easier without those damn fist helmets.
Yeah, they are. It is. I like the effect, and I like what it does. I really like what it does.
I like the effect when it gets turned sideways and you can't see anything. That's the effect I like. So, with your background, your experience level, was there like a moment in time? Because I know you started training before you retired, so. Was there a moment in time where you had some event, real world or in the training world, where you said, I have got to change the way that people are doing defensive handgun training?
You know, I assumed, and everybody lives in their own little vacuum, I assumed that, and I shouldn't have because I didn't have it as a police officer in service and training or anything like that, but I just assumed that, well, the training industry at large, the open enrollment, the private sector stuff, the stuff that you got paid for, you know, which has to be good. I just assumed that the training like this existed, you know, and it kind of did in a way, but for one thing, people weren't using simulations. You know, I think probably one of the earliest extreme close quarter shooting courses out there was Insights had, you know, they've been, John and Greg have been doing coursework for a long, 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 long time. They had an ECQ course out there in the mid-90s. But there wasn't simulations and they just weren't going as hard for safety's sake, And we also didn't have the proliferation of internet like we do now, where you can see a lot of things that you just, you know, really couldn't see before. You know, guys were actually going after each other. The intensity of this kind of training when I started doing open enrollment, it just wasn't there. And I saw a lot of people who just they just broke down pretty bad, kind of like I did, you know, when unfortunately, you know, real world, I mean, you know, I've told you a couple of stories, you know, that I usually keep inside of coursework, but I had some pretty serious failures of my training buying drugs, a couple of which almost cost me my life. And, you know, there's no worse feeling, you know, than going unconscious and wondering if you'll feel a bullet enter your head. Mm-hmm. That's your last conscious thought. And the next conscious thought is, hey, thank God, you know, somebody obviously got me out because I'm out of that situation. You know, that's a game changer. And that'll change your perspective on what and how to train forever. So I think probably to answer your question, probably within the first year, I saw that the kind of training that I envisioned being taught just it really didn't exist, not at the level that I wanted to take it. And more importantly, the people that were coming to it wanted it and were responsive to it. You know, if I would have tried to do this kind of training in service with my old agency, there's no way, man. They're just not going to happen, you know. But when you're dealing with very motivated, interested, you know, people, and you're willing to really push the limits, man, you can do all kinds of cool stuff. It's normally, it was a perfect storm, man. It was a perfect synergy. And I really have to credit Paul Gomez, you know, God rest his soul. I really have to credit Paul with badgering me and beating me over the head to hand the shingle out. And the whole thing was kind of accidental. I was trying to get, I was trying to pay for a wedding at the time to my ex-wife. I was bitching to Paul one day about not making enough overtime. And Paul said, hey, man, let me set you up some classes, you know, just do your thing. And beat me over the head to hang out a shingle now for a couple of years. And I'll set them up. All you got to do is show up and do your thing. And I'll collect the money and we'll pay you. Okay, sure. I needed the money. I'll try it. All right, whatever. And man, besides making what I need to make, have made to pay for the wedding, man, I just had a good time. It really brought me back to wanting to teach people again, you know, and wanting to go out there. Because I've been an academy instructor for a long, long time, since 1992. I taught defensive tactics in our regional academy. That had just gotten old and stale. And, you know, I had all the benefits in the open enrollment private sector of the best people that I ran into in a police academy that genuinely wanted to get a handle on this stuff, with none of the toxic organizational bureaucracy. Mm. So, I mean, I was in hard heaven. I mean, I really was. So that's kind of how the whole thing, you know, kind of got started. And now, this year it'll be 10 years. July it'll be exactly a decade.
That's awesome, man.
I had people say, hey, what's your marketing plan? I don't know. I have no idea. You know, my marketing plan is, you know, enjoy doing what you do. You know, tell the truth, don't be a douche, show up on time, and remember it's, you know, about them, not you. I think guys that start doing this stuff that, you know, want to see their names in neon, you know, you're getting in for the wrong reason. It's not about you, man. It's about what that guy can do at the end of the day, the kind of experience that he has. You know, I'm just a facilitator of his experience. It's not about me. It's about them.
Now, I know that, you know, going through a couple of your courses, that the experience that I had there was very atypical in a lot of the training schools that I've been through, in the sense that you don't come off like a ego-driven instructor. You know, you don't come off as like, there's the instructor over there and here's us, the students over here. We go to lunch together. We go to dinner together. You know, you hang out with everybody. It's almost like hanging out with a buddy who just knows a lot more cool shit than you do. You know what I mean? I mean, that's kind of what I felt like.
Yeah,
and
I like
so.
That, man. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I you know, nobody wears a cape. Mm. Nobody does, you know. And I think that as soon as you start buying your own press, that's usually when you get your ass handed to you and you get served up pretty well. I know I bought my own press back in the day when I was a young guy, and it cost me. It did. It cost me. I thought I was something I was not, and I got humbled. You know, fortunately, again, didn't cost me my life, but I got humbled badly, more than once. Mm. So, yeah, man, to me that when when you train like this too, man, it's interesting to watch because regardless of skill, when you add in all these other elements, it really becomes an any given Sunday thing. You know, anybody, really, literally, anybody can have their ass handed to them by anybody else on a given day at a given time. Mm. It's fascinating to watch that, man, and it keeps everybody cool.
Well, I think that, you know, another thing that I picked up from you in the class is you said, you know, no matter how good that you are, no matter how good of a fighter or a good, you know, talker you are or whatever, that basically you've got a 50% chance that you're just not going to win. You know, the other guy's going to get lucky and you're not. And, you know, bad things happen to good people and that's just the way it goes.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm entangled with one guy and I'm a champion Greco-Roman wrestler and I know that I'm right there at the point of getting a duck under and taking this guy's back and smashing him into the concrete and I'm giving him a war cry. And, you know, I've got slick-soled shoes. I'm not wearing wrestling shoes, and I'm in a parking lot. I'm not on a mat, and I hit some hydraulic fluid, and I go down, and I fracture my skull, and I'm semi-conscious. Guess what? Life just gave you a big serving of humble, and that's what I mean when I say, man, anything can happen. Any little thing like that, even with somebody who's better. Which, again, goes way towards my thought process. One of the areas we should be focusing on, probably that should have the most focus, certainly initially, is on deselecting yourself away from having to draw a gun, throw a blow, get a blade, whatever else. And what kind of strategy template we use to recognize and prevent criminal assault so it doesn't get to the point of having to pull off a murder skill. I think that, and I think if we're not doing that kind of stuff inside of specific defensive related classes, empty hand stuff, knife stuff, gun stuff, then yeah, we're not doing our students a service and giving them a complete, well-rounded curriculum.
So we've got I got about a minute before we got to go, Craig. And if we've got a minute left, I want to ask you one more question. So many of the people that I tell about ECQC, so many people I show, you know, the video to, I try to convince our students who've been through some of our programs, like, hey, you got to come to this class, kind of take it to the next level, learn from a different perspective. And, you know, they go, like you said, they do their due diligence, they hit the Google, and then they are like, no way, you know, I'm not going to do that. Right. How do you think someone is best convinced, you know, fathers, husbands, military law enforcement guys, wives, whatever, how are they best convinced to take a program like this? How do you do that? How do you convince people to do it? Other than those of us who just want to do it because we enjoy that kind of stuff. How do you take someone who doesn't want to and convince them to do it?
That's a good question, man. I think one of the best ways to do that is convince them, hey, man, this is pretty safe. Looks bad, okay, but it's really not when both parties are going after each other and everybody's defending themselves. I would argue that my injury rate is significantly less than the average flag football league. So in 10 years, I've had exactly 3 broken bones. That's it. I've had a lot of people sore.
You know, a lot of wounded pride.
But as far as injuries, I've had a broken collarbone. I've had one tib fib fracture that actually occurred with two guys that were screwing around on a break and not actually in the class, but two young guys that like to bang on each other. And then a broken finger. So, you know, the very real little change. You know, and really the way to remember it is, hey, man, as bad as it looks, it's still only training. It's still not the real thing. You know, I'm not going to let somebody, you know, beat on you to the point where you're going to get injured.
Right.
Okay? Scary looking, not that scary afterwards. Not really. Usually, and we see that too, usually once somebody hits like their third evolution in ECQC, they're significantly better just within the weekend because they've been inoculated to the pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So, safety. I preach safety. Let them know it's safe, man. It's just training. It's not the real thing.
Right on. Well, Craig, I really look forward to seeing you again next month, man. We're going to be hosting Craig's ECQC class up in Prescott, May 30th to June 1st. I really look forward to having you back, man. I really enjoy your coursework.
Buddy, thank you. I'll look forward to coming back out there, and we're going to have a good time, as we always do.
Right on, man. Hey, thanks for calling in and taking the time today, Craig. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Glenn. I appreciate it, bro.
All right, man. Take care.
Bye-bye.
So as I mentioned, we've got Craig up in Prescott with Independence Training. We're going to be hosting him May 30th to June 1st.
Yay.
Come to the class. If you have to travel, come to the class.
Don't be scared.
If you want more information, go to the Arms Room Facebook page or go to Independence Training's Facebook page, and you can get contact information there. You can always get contact information on independencetraining.com. We'll post up a link on the Arms Room Facebook page. So we just want to again say thanks to Craig for joining us and all the great information that he shared with us. Until next week, stay aware, stay safe, train hard. So proudly we hailed, and the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, oh, the to say.